Thank you, Don. And I want to say to Nancy and Stephen that I'm sorry to hear about the mass shooting there. I watched the news tonight and I didn't see anything, so I don't know when it happened. I watched the national news and didn't see anything. So sorry, they happen everywhere now, don't they? So I am reading from Consciousness in the Absolute. And I'm going to read January 14, 1981. The ultimate state is that state. By the way, I just donated a book to the retreat house. It's I Am That, which I know you guys have heard of. But it was an older version. I think the, if I remember correctly, the copyright on it was 1978, which means that book that I just donated was published before this conversation that I'm reading right here. So if you go, if you want to read I Am That in a really old, old, fragile book, it'll be on the shelf at the retreat house. It's the same book as the one that we all have now with the paperback. It's just this is an old hardcover version. Okay, the ultimate state is the state in which nothing exists. Neither I, nor you, nor manifestation. The questioner asks a very interesting question. Can Maharaj describe the ultimate state? Nisargadatta says, can I cut up my sleep and make a design of it? Dissociate yourself from your body and tell me something about that. Can you describe it? My talks are not meant for normal human beings. The normal person's field of understanding does not go beyond his own body. The one who identifies with the body is the consciousness itself. It mistakenly assumes that it is the body and behaves as if its unlimited potential has been limited by this one single phenomenon. Therefore, with this identification, whatever behavior the consciousness adopts will be limited by the body. The one who understands this ultimate meaning of life gets disassociated from the body, and a transformation takes place. The consciousness is universal, universal like the day, universal like the night. To that principle, you cannot give a name or a title. Who is the one who knows that there was no day, no night? The consciousness was not there. Day and night, remembering and forgetting, the waking state and the deep sleep state, are they one and the same thing or are they separate? The capacity of consciousness is something astounding. I didn't know I was, and then suddenly I knew I am. This I amness is the power of Maya. At the retreat today, or basically while taking a walk after lunch at the retreat today, we started talking about the Absolute. And what brought us to talk about it is that there was a gentle healing tip for Gentle Healing 1 earlier this week, which was actually a few paragraphs from What is the Self by Bernadette Roberts. Let me just pull that up and read it to you, because you guys may not have read that, and I think it's very applicable here. And better for me to read her words rather than try and recall them. I think that was 2 days ago. Let me have a peek. Yeah, in fact, let me go ahead and share my screen so you guys can read along with me. All right, so I'll just start at the beginning of the tip. This was the tip for lesson 325 in A Course in Miracles. The theme is, what is creation? Our special theme says, creation is the opposite of all illusions, for creation is truth. And of course, for anybody who's not super familiar with A Course in Miracles, when A Course in Miracles says creation, it is not referring to manifestation. It's actually referring to the absolute, which is kind of interesting because usually people use the word creation to refer to manifestation. So we could say the absolute is the opposite of all illusions, for the absolute is the truth. Unfortunately, all that we are aware of is illusion. That means that we have no idea what truth is. It's helpful if we take in this realization. We have no idea what truth is. And, you know, in his own way, Nisargadatta just said this, because when the questioner asked, can Maharaj describe the ultimate state, he answered by saying, can I cut up my sleep and make a design of it? Right? So he's basically saying, there's no way I can describe it to you, and there's no way you can understand it. We have no idea what truth is. This is why NTI Luke says, there are expectations on our truth. The expectations are based on what you know within your slumber. They are not based on knowledge or life. They are based on interpretation or death. What do you expect of me? Where is it that you think I'm living? Free yourself and open your mind to me unfettered by expectations. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. And then when writing the tip, I wrote, people have often asked me what that last sentence means. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me. And here's where we get to Bernadette Roberts. In her book, What is the Self? Bernadette Roberts describes some of the last temptations that we experience prior to Mananasa, or prior to awakening to the absolute. She writes, we have to keep in mind that consciousness is the experience of energy, and that in the unitive state, or the real world, as of course there is still the experience of various energies and feelings. Because these energies are new to us, they seem to be quite extraordinary. So one task of the unitive state is that we do not mistake these energies for the divine, but instead see them as belonging solely to the unconscious self. This task may not be as easy as it sounds. To regard certain energies as supernatural can be a powerful temptation. And you know, maybe I'll share it with you in just a moment, the story of the yogini. But this is what the story of the yogini is all about, is that she was tempted by these apparently divine manifestations. And then what she remembered to do was to ask, to whom do these appear? Who sees this, right? And focus back on awareness. And by remembering to focus on the seer rather than the object seen, even when the object seen appeared to be divine, she awoke. So maybe I'll look at that story next. Is the truth that must eventually be learned or disclosed is that the divine is not an energy or a power, and that none of our experiences of energy or power is divine. Instead, these are powers of the unconscious self. The claim to possess supernatural powers in the unitive state is well known and documented. People have regarded themselves as prophets, healers, saviors, and God knows what else. As Carl Jung noted, the possible masks the unconscious self can take are almost unlimited. They represent the various cultural views man has of a superior being. One of my favorite books is The Secret Search in India. I love that book. It's by Paul Brunton, and I love that book because his discernment is so keen, even though he was just a beginner on the spiritual path. He goes to India looking for a true guru, and he runs into all gurus in India who can manifest all kinds of things. And something in him knows that's not it. That's not it. And near the end of the book, the guru that he meets, that he decides is the true guru, is Ramana Maharshi. And of course, if you know anything about Ramana Maharshi, Ramana Maharshi had no interest in supernatural powers, no interest in manifesting things. In fact, Ramana Maharshi, when asked about that, because Indians in general are very interested in that type of thing. So when asked about that, Ramana Maharshi would say, you know, he would always refer them back to who sees the manifestation, right? Who sees the healing? To whom does that appear? Bernadette Roberts continues, throughout this stage or state, there will be many temptations to put on one of these divine or supernatural masks and play out that role. If we fall for one of these masks, we forfeit going any further with the journey. It is imperative to stay with the true divine center, which is a still point and not an energy point, and to dismiss these arising energies or powers. So what Nisargadatta is saying, he says, the capacity of consciousness is something astounding. And that's what Bernadette Roberts and Carl Jung are saying here. In fact, Carl Jung noted, the possible masks the unconscious self can take are almost unlimited. Healers, saviors, and then she says, and God knows what else. Nisargadatta says, the capacity of consciousness is something astounding. I didn't know I was, and then suddenly I knew I am. And then he says, this I amness is the power of Maya. Maya is illusion. He's saying consciousness is the power of illusion. In the natural meditation retreat, when we contemplate quotes by Nisargadatta, there's one quote where Nisargadatta refers to consciousness as the first error, the first fall from the absolute. It's interesting because from here, from manifestation, from what I call the fourth principle of God, awakening to consciousness, awakening to unity consciousness, seems like an awakening, and it is. It's awakening from the belief in separation. It's awakening from the ego to the unity of consciousness. But it's not the awakening. It's awakening to the first error. After that, the questioner asks a question that might go in a different direction. He says, is the desire to be free wrong? And Nisargadatta says, there is nothing happening. Nobody is bound. Therefore, there is no question of liberation. Oops. Okay, I guess my video got turned off when I wasn't looking. There is no question of liberation. I remember I used to read these kind of statements a few years ago, and I would get so confused. You know, for example, Michael Langford says that in order to awaken, you know, we need the really intense desire for liberation. And then, you know, now we have Nisargadatta saying, nobody's bound. There's no question of liberation. And I used to get so confused, especially since at that point, you know, I was still suffering myself, and it seemed like I needed liberation. But if you think about that still point that Bernadette Roberts just wrote about, that still awareness. Last night we played games with it in gentle healing. I held the clock up and had you guys watch the second hand and notice that time is moving in you. That still point, that still awareness has never been bound. Therefore, it doesn't require liberation. It's the mind that appears bound, and the mind ties itself in its own knots. You know, it's funny to watch the mind if there's like a problem in your life, because the mind can think of a solution and then think of why that solution's not perfect and then think of another solution and why that solution's not perfect and then another solution and why that solution's not perfect. Or even if a dream is coming true, let's say you're buying your dream house, the mind can think about, yeah, but what about this? And what about this? And what about this? You know, the mind just ties up its own knots. But the still point of awareness is not involved in that. It isn't bound, therefore it doesn't need to be liberated. And of course, this is what Nisargadatta is looking at. You know, we always see ourselves. If I see myself as a distrustful person, I'm not going to trust you either. If I'm purified and joyous, I actually see you as purified and joyous. And in fact, I'll tell you the truth, I do see you as purified and joyous. And when a person expresses to me that they're not happy or that they're really upset or that they're really scared about something, for a nanosecond, my very first reaction is shock, and that's the truth. I forget that not everybody's clear and happy until they remind me. And then I turn in compassionately listening and see if there's something I can offer. And sometimes I feel like there isn't. Sometimes I feel like it's been so long since I've had the bound up mind that I don't remember the bound up mind well enough, and I don't remember the ways out well enough to really provide the best advice anymore. But I'm shocked when people get upset over things, because I don't anymore. You see the reflection of yourself. Now Nisargadatta, who has awoken to the absolute, is going to see the absolute. He's going to see the still point that's never been bound. So when you ask him, how can I be liberated? He's going to say, liberated? From what? Right? That's just the way it is. We see ourselves. We see our state of mind and others. So there is nothing happening. Nobody is bound. Therefore, there is no question of liberation. It is only when one thinks of himself as an individual that he thinks of bondage and liberation. Whatever concepts you have collected in this world are totally useless. That's a heck of a sentence. This kind of goes, oh yeah, go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, one thing that's really helped me in this regard is the circus example of training of the young elephant and putting a chain around its foot and putting a stake in the ground. Once it reaches, 6 months, a year, and they take it off, it still stays within that circle. It feels like it's bound. It can see everything out there. There's no chain there anymore. Freedom, but there's no way to get outside of that box, because that's the box that we've created for ourselves. And I think of the chain, there's never a physical chain there, is the chain of our own making, of our human, human conditioning, is that invisible chain that we created ourselves. So that's what's kind of always helped me. I'm bound myself, and it's an invisible binding. There's nothing there to really bind me.
Yes.
But yes. but I have to break that chain, and that's
break that.
As we all know, you know, you're little easier said than that invisible chain is pretty strong still sometimes.
Yeah, it is pretty strong because it's that mental conditioning. It's really what it is. It's that it may not be a physical chain anymore, but it's a chain in the brain. You know, that's where it is. It exists in the brain. In fact, that takes us to this next sentence. He says, whatever concepts you have collected in this world are totally useless. And I was going to say, this reminds me of the conversation we had last night in Gentle Healing when we were talking about the programming, right? We talked about if you were born in another place and time, you literally would not be the person that you are now because your brain would be programmed so differently by that time and that culture. And yet, we all take that programming and believe that it's true, that it's right, and it's who we are, and it's what's right and what's wrong in the world. But it's just a program. He says, it's totally useless. It is the invisible chain. That's the invisible chain. Everything that we've been programmed to believe is true. Whatever concepts you have collected in this world are totally useless. Understand that the total manifestation is the child of a barren woman. Now that's an interesting sentence because a barren woman can't have a child. And he's saying manifestation is the child of a barren woman. Do you know what he's saying? From his perspective, from the absolute, there is no manifestation. It is the invisible chain. Understand that the total manifestation is the child of a barren woman. But having understood this, give full attention to your work. So this is the paradox that Ron just kind of pointed to. Like there is no chain, and yet we have to give full attention, full self-effort to freeing ourselves from this non-existent chain. That's the paradox, right? It's just the way it is. You know? And in fact, this is what the non-dual idiots, I don't know what else to call them, the ones who are just kind of fooling themselves, you know, they'll sit around saying, oh, there is no world, it's all an illusion, but, you know, and they're not free at all. The stock market drops, and if they have money in the stock market, they get upset. You know, they're still trying to control and manipulate things, and yet they're using this teaching as a denial technique to the degree that they can. It's you know, we can't say there is no world in a denial type of way. We can trust the teaching there is no world, but as long as we're experiencing a world and experiencing ourselves as humans, we have to do the spiritual practice to free ourselves from the non-existent world. That's the paradox. Understand that the total manifestation is the child of a barren woman. But having understood this, give full attention to your work and let that work be done as efficiently as possible. And I don't think he's just talking about spiritual work there. I think he's saying whatever comes to you in your life to do. I think he's saying, give full attention to whatever comes to you in your life to do. Even though it's a non-existent world, right? Have integrity in the non-existent world. You know, do your job well, pay your bills, take care of your family, and give your attention to your spiritual practice. And somewhere inside of us, we all know that's true, right? The only ones of us that can truly sit and meditate 12 hours a day are the ones of us who don't have families, Anybody with a family knows you can't ignore your family for your spiritual path. You know it. It's right here. And you also can't ignore your spiritual path for your family. You got to find that balance. You're following your intuition, right? Somehow you have to pay attention to everything in this non-existent world. It's a paradox. Yeah, Don says, or you pay the consequences for it. Yes. So understand that the total manifestation is the child of a barren woman. But having understood this, give full attention to your work and let that work be done as efficiently as possible. Take good care of this work that you do in the world, because it is an orphan. Shoot, it's less than an orphan if it's the child of a barren woman. Not sure where he came up with the orphan example, but I think the moral of the story is we don't get anywhere by being selfish, in denial, lying to ourselves and others. You have to have full integrity in everything that comes your way, right? Full integrity in everything. Yeah, and I guess I'll just leave it at that. So next week, we'll look at January 17th, 1981. So you guys have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you on Sunday.